Hello, my name is Daniel Whitehead, and I'm part of the 10th Kitsilano congregation. For my day job, I lead an international mental health charity called Sanctuary Mental Health Ministries. Today, I'm speaking from my local community garden, and that's because, just like we did last summer, we're filming each message in this Sacred Spaces series from a different location around our city that can speak to us and allow us to experience God in fresh and creative ways. You know, before I moved to Vancouver in 2014, we had a little house on the south coast of England. In fact, we sold that to pay for my master's degree. And without doubt, one of my greatest joys about that home, besides the fact that we owned it, was that we had a garden. It wasn't a huge garden, though by Vancouver standards, it wasn't bad. It was approximately 800 square feet of space, a little rectangle that was ours to steward. And in the short time that we owned that house, as we were only there for a couple of years, I completely overhauled the garden. One day I was in the garden lamenting the fact that it was just a bit shoddy. It hadn't been cared for, the grass was patchy, it was a bit ugly and boring. And I sat on the patio, which was next to the house, and therefore couched in shade all day, every day. And I made a bold decision. I went to my garage, I grabbed a shovel, and I went to the other end of the garden, which was bathed in glorious sunshine nearly all day, every day, and I began digging out the footings of a new patio. My plan was to dig out some very deep foundations between 12 and 18 inches, way thicker than they needed to be. But my plan was to take the old patio and break it up and use it as backfill as the foundations of the new patio. So that's what I did. I started with a sledgehammer and quickly moved to a jackhammer, but I broke down the old tatty patio into little boulders and all of the foundations, and I then dumped this load, probably 4 tons of material, into the pit that I had dug. I then covered it in scalpings, like small stones, then hired a compactor, then borrowed a cement mixer and began laying a new patio. And perhaps inevitably, this project spawned other projects, because with it, the pit that I dug out, I took the earth and I spread it over the garden to build up the height of the garden. I also dug out all of the borders. I then laid new turf and filled the borders with rich soil. And then I planted the borders with approximately 60 plants, plants that would attract bees and butterflies. And sure enough, within a year, once everything had bedded down, I had a garden that was mine, that we could watch grow from our sunny patio. And it was a wonderful feeling to help steward and create a space where new life was spawning in the plants and the frogs and the bugs and the bees and the butterflies. And new memories were being forged. In this way, my garden became a sacred space. And the act of getting my hands dirty and the aching muscles from toiling in the garden all became part of a sacred rhythm for me. One of the things that I always find soul-restoring about a garden, just like this one, a place where the cycles of life feature so prominently, is that when done well, there is a sense of collective well-being. When you think about it, a garden is a collection of features, usually intentionally cultivated by people. And yet the collective effect is that something greater takes place in the garden as a whole. The collective efforts of these plants, these vegetables, these herbs, this paving, that fence, that water feature, when it's done well, is that this space has a sense of unity and well-being, a sense in which collective flourishing is inevitable and evident. A garden can change the feel or atmosphere of a space. A garden is a place where the agency of people and the sustaining power of God intersect and come together. Perhaps this is why our story as God's people begins in a garden in the book of Genesis and ends in a garden city in the book of Revelation. God and humanity working together to steward God's good creation. Indeed, the first vocation human beings were ever given was to steward a garden in the Genesis narrative. When you think about it, as stewards of a garden, all we can do is give life the best chance at flourishing. We can use rich soil and compost. We can use techniques to ward off pests. We can water, we can pull the weeds, we can choose to plant in a way that recognizes the seasons. We can choose certain plants for shade and others for sunny spots. And in these ways, we can tend to the overall health of the plants. But when it comes to growth and the miracle of life and fruitfulness, well, that's where we just have to wait in faith that God, as the creator and sustainer, will do his part as well. And a community garden where plants and vegetables are grown and cultivated by a whole diverse community of all ages and backgrounds is perhaps one of the best examples we have of this picture of God and humanity working together harmoniously. Now, one potentially jarring issue that many of us face in Western societies is that this unified vision of community and collective flourishing, as represented by a community garden, often stands in stark contrast to many of our practical experiences of life in the world. Our culture, in the West at least, is generally defined by individualism. Therefore, our vision of success, at least culturally speaking, is often an autonomous individual, a self-made person, standing on their own two feet, making it in this world alone. Now, as followers of Jesus, we have to think critically and ask the question, how does this all too common vision of self-flourishing and self-sustenance track with the biblical narrative? My mind immediately goes to a few passages in the scriptures when the Apostle Paul is trying to describe this new community of Christ followers, of which we are a part. When writing to the church in Corinth, who were having a hard time staying unified, factions were building where some would say, "Oh, I'm a follower of Paul," and others would say, "Oh, I'm a follower of Peter." Still others would say, "Oh, I'm a follower of Apollos." And Paul writes to this fracturing, disjointed community and emphatically says, "I am a follower of Christ, and so are you." In 1 Corinthians 1, verses 12 to 27, Paul goes on to describe the Christian community as a body, made up of many connected parts, with Christ as the head. He basically says, you need each other. You should be understanding and appreciative of each other's differences, because in your differences, you come together to create something far more than you could ever be as individual parts. You create a body with different roles, but the same glorious purpose to glorify the head that is Christ. It's a well-known and beautiful passage, but there's a little verse in it that I want us to hold on to as we think about this sacred space, this garden. Paul writes in verses 26 and 27, "If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it." You know, it's a well-known but no less powerful passage in the Bible that offers such a helpful metaphor for who we are as a community and how we should function. And it strikes me that the role of a community garden is to ensure that many people flourish. No one plants just enough vegetables for themselves. I mean, no one plants a single carrot. It's common to plant more than you need and then distribute it among others. It's joining in the vocation of stewardship, which leads to provision for many. Not just me. Many years ago, we grew chilies and tomatoes, just 5 plants in total. This was one summer, and we had this deck that was like a sun trap. And we had such a harvest. There was no way humanly possible to eat that many tomatoes and chilies. And it became this lovely gift that when people would visit, we would give them a bag and we'd say, "Pick some chilies or tomatoes on the way out." The vocation of distributing what God has made was an unexpected joy for us. And I thought to myself, you know, I add plant feeder once a week. I water them every day. But apart from that, I don't do much else to create this life and this experience of community flourishing. I don't know about you, but being a Brit who lived in South Africa for a time, who's traveled extensively and repeatedly to some different places around the world, like India and Albania and Russia and the continent of Africa, and now living in Canada, I'm very aware of my cultural worldview and just how contextualized it is. I would argue that in general, one hallmark of Western culture is the emphasis on individualism. is often implicitly heralded as the ultimate goal of a person to be a self-sufficient and autonomous individual. And to feel powerful, to feel whole, one must stand on their own two feet and make their way through this world alone. Now, I think that this philosophical and culturally specific perspective is actually drawing us away from a more biblically rooted vision of personhood and community. I think the Bible regularly picks up on this theme of relationality and how relationships are central to our sense of well-being. We even see this in the doctrine of the Trinity, this vision of the mutual edification of the persons of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. In God's very being, there is mutual love and care. We have this picture on our wall at home. It's by an artist called Scott Erickson, and I love it because it speaks directly to this idea of flourishing being rooted in community. That flourishing is not an individual endeavor to be mastered alone, but rather it's a community endeavor to be pursued together, which is revealed in the persons of the Trinity, who in this artwork are each filling each other's cups. Indeed, community life, as described in the New Testament, particularly in passages like Acts 2, reveals a tangible expression of God's kingdom, which would be focused on the inclusion and incorporation and esteeming of those that are otherwise made to feel like they just don't fit in wider society. A community where personal flourishing is caught up in community flourishing, and community flourishing is dependent upon the flourishing of all its members. Now, this idea of seeing my life as a relational endeavor, as part of a bigger community, can seem like a tricky and abstract concept for those of us who have been born and raised in a Western culture that prioritizes individualism. However, I would suggest it is often not such a difficult concept for many who were born and raised in certain non-Western cultural settings. As part of my most recent master's degree, I spent some time looking at certain theological perspectives in Africa. I studied Ubuntu theology, and Ubuntu theology, largely promoted by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, is this African concept which says, "I am because we are." It's a philosophy that undergirds every interaction. There is no me without community. I am caught up in it. As well as looking at Ubuntu, I also looked at an emerging indigenous theology in Canada, and I was left reflecting how much I have to learn from my brothers and sisters in these communities. Indeed, when the horrendous discovery at Kamloops a little while ago, or more recent discoveries in other residential schools, when that discovery was made, it went to the heart and soul of all indigenous persons. It's easy for some of us in Western society to disengage with the emotional aspect of this kind of discovery by saying things like, "Oh, well, it happened a long time ago." But in Indigenous culture, it is virtually impossible. What happens to one happens to all. And the same is true for creation in Indigenous thinking. What is done to creation is done to a people. There is an understanding of community life that makes it impossible not to feel the pain of something, even though it may have happened some time ago. This horrendous loss and injustice will be very fresh and real and tangible for the whole community, because collective flourishing is tied to those who've gone before. Time simply doesn't erode this sense of feeling in this culture. And this is a really interesting theological point when we consider the great cloud of witnesses described by Paul in the book of Hebrews, a group of those who've gone before us, of whom we are a part, but this group is still watching on, and in some strange metaphysical way, they are still a part of us, and we are a part of them. We are part of this ancient community of people that have laid down our self-reliance to take up a reliance on Christ and each other, his body. When you think of a community garden and you see the vegetables growing, you see the miracle of God's provision, and you see the handiwork of people who have cultivated the landscape, who have dug their hands in and used their agency to create an environment where God's sustaining power can be fully realized and revealed. It reminds us that no one is truly self-sufficient. Our whole lives are lived in and through and with and because of others. This is just the way God has made us to live. So what does this practically mean for us? Well, here are a few thoughts before I close. When it comes to personal flourishing and personal languishing, a community can hold space for us when we're at our best and when we're at our worst. God does this always in the terrible and dark things of life and in the amazing things of life. God is somehow present to all situations. Did you know that 2 people die every second on this earth? And yet 4 people are born every second on this earth. God is present to all of this and all that's in between, all of the time. As a community, we must resist the urge to live in a way that ignores the pain of the world, the struggles, the difficulties, the crops that didn't grow, the harvest that we didn't see. We must face this reality and carry this burden together as much as we're able. You know, I have a friend, and if I'm honest, they are so focused on their own desire for the world to be a happy and positive place that it's virtually impossible for them to engage in negative emotions. To me, this speaks more to their own inability to deal with the difficult things in their life, but they often frame it in spiritual language and tell everyone how positive they are and how positivity is a choice. But their positivity comes at the expense of lacking any compassion or empathy. 2 vital positions for communities to hold in offering hope and recovery and inclusion for people in the midst of crisis. Life is about finding the balance. The stewardship of a garden teaches us about balance. Moments of hard work, moments of rest, seasons of planting, seasons of harvesting, seasons to take everything down and start again, seasons to take out a sledgehammer and smash some things, and maybe to use that destructive process as a foundation for something better to emerge that's still fully yet to be realized. We have to realize that as relational beings, made in the image of a relational God, made for relationships, out of the fruit of a relationship, that our relational self is of paramount importance. The size of your bank balance, or the glamour of your Instagram account, or the perceived independence of your decision-making, or the state of your physical health, is not the arbiter of your ultimate health in God's kingdom. Rather, it is the state of our relationships to God, to self, to others, and to creation. And our commitment to this holistic relational framework is what ultimately defines our health before God. And I happen to think that a community garden is a great place to be reminded of that. Contrary to what our culture might tell us, independence is not the highest goal of humanity, but rather interdependence is the goal of humanity. Relational depth and supporting one another is always how we were intended to live in God's community. We are a body. We support each other. When one hurts, we all hurt. When one rejoices, we all rejoice with them. And we do this to glorify the head that is Christ. You know, it's one thing to go through a dark time alone, not knowing why something is happening, not having words or answers. And it's another thing to do that with a community around you, where collectively, we still may have no words or answers. All we have is presence, empathy, and compassion. This act of presence can be enough to help someone through even the darkest time. One final thought about the garden before I close. One other gift the garden gives to us, I think, is a chance to observe the details. I mean, look at this. None of this is in packaging. All of these vegetables are connected to a root or a shoot. It's like miracles all around us, to be observed and marveled at and appreciated. I don't know about you, but my 5-year-old son is brilliant at noticing the details. It may be because he's closer to the ground, or it may be because our culture hasn't yet drained him of his wonder and curiosity. But he is always noticing bugs and creatures and phenomena in the created order. And that's why it takes us so long for us to walk anywhere. And as much as that can be frustrating, I have to acknowledge that I love that about him. Perceiving the small things is so important. Taking the time to notice the details is a profoundly spiritual practice, a practice that enables us to see God at work in new ways. A couple of years ago, I was on a work trip in Liverpool, England. I have some very good friends who live there. And one day my friend gave me a little tour of the two cathedrals in Liverpool. There is a glorious modern Anglican cathedral, albeit built in an older Gothic style, and also a glorious modern Catholic cathedral. Both are architecturally very impressive for very different reasons. But outside of the Anglican cathedral, some 50 yards away, there is an oratory, a small separate chapel as part of the cemetery that sits around the cathedral. And directly outside of this oratory, there is a sculpture by the internationally renowned artist Tracy Emin. In 2008, the city of Liverpool gave her over $100,000 to commission a statue. And what she made for them was a life-size sparrow standing on top of the end of a scaffold pole. And this statue is directly outside of this oratory. And this little sparrow that you wouldn't notice unless someone who knew about it told you about it. I mean, there's no plaque to tell you about it. It's staring up at this gigantic Gothic style cathedral. And I have to say, it's brilliant. It's breathtaking. It's subversive. And to be honest, I found it quite moving. A small community garden, maybe like a little sparrow in comparison to this vast and unending cosmos that God sustains. But let us not forget, as that great hymn reminds us, that his eye is on the sparrow. So may our gardens be sacred spaces for us, a space where we see God at work in the detail, a space where we are reminded that we are always called to bring our agency and to use it whilst understanding that it only ultimately works because of God's sustaining power. And may our gardens be a space where we are reminded that none of us is truly self-sufficient, that all of us need a community to find well-being and meaning. And may we be reminded that in times of darkness and struggle, which many people are facing right now, that our community is here to support and sustain and to uphold and to carry our burdens together. 10th Church has to be a place that shares our burdens together, for this is the way that God has always intended his community to be. If your harvest hasn't come, if you feel like a wilting plant in need of water, if you feel like you need to pick up a sledgehammer and start breaking some things to make something better, may you know that you're not alone and that there are others who are willing to walk with you, to sow with you, to reap a harvest with you as well. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it.